I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's not every day that Republican and Democratic elected officials, union leaders, and business executives are all on the same side of an issue. But that happened recently when it was announced that Sunoco and the Carlyle Group had created a joint partnership, keeping the Sunoco refinery in South Philadelphia open and saving hundreds of jobs. In June, the ConocoPhillips refinery in Trainer, Pennsylvania, was sold to a subsidiary of Delta Airlines, Monroe Energy, also saving jobs. The future of the Sunoco refinery in Marcus Hook is a little more uncertain after it was closed this spring and laid off 400 workers. Braskem, which makes plastics, bought a part of that plant, saving some of those lost jobs. While this was a group effort, United Steelworker officials played an important role in the negotiations that led to these agreements, and three of them join us today on Radio Times, two of them with us here in our Philadelphia studios. Jim Savage is president of USW Local 10.1, representing workers at the Sunoco Oil Refinery in South Philadelphia. He's an operator. And Jim, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is David Miller, and he is president of USW Local 10.90. Employed until recently at the Marcus Hook refinery, laid off a couple of months ago. And David, we're happy to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And on the telephone is Dennis Stefano, and he is president of USW Local 10234 in Trainer, Trainer, Pennsylvania. That's the Monroe Refinery. And Dennis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
Jim, let me go back to September when you and the folks working at the Sunoco Oil Refinery in South Philadelphia learned that the refinery was going to be closed. What was your first reaction?
It was shocking. I mean, you know, we woke up 6 in the morning and got an email that, you know, Sunoco had made this announcement. It was Philadelphia and Marcus Hook. On the one hand, you saw it coming by how the direction the company had taken for several years leading up to that, but it's still,
right,
you know, like really
shocking.
A shock to get the actual news. And right away, you know, we got together with Dave's Local and, you know, just started, okay, what are we going to do? You know, we went to Washington within a week to meet with all of the local congressional delegation, Pat May and Bob Brady, Chuck Fatah, Carney from Delaware, and just started, you know, trying to educate people on what was going on. And
had you ever done that before?
We've lobbied before, but it's never been so personal. Right, and
because it's about your job and the jobs of the
exactly,
the local union.
Right,
Dennis, let me get you in on the conversation. You were at the Delta Airline, now at the Delta Airline subsidiary. When you got the news about the Trainer site, what was your reaction?
We were quite shocked. Conoco management showed up at 7:30 in the morning on the 27th of September, and 15 minutes later they made an announcement that we are stopping production today. And that was a Tuesday, and by Friday we were not making a drop of gasoline or diesel or jet fuel. So we were absolutely shocked because this refinery really ran well, and they actually praised the refinery and operations in a number of ways.
But were there indications, as Jim was saying, he saw some of the writing on the wall? Did you?
Conoco acted a little bit differently. Conoco operates 12 refineries across the United States, and one of the things they had been saying for the past 2 years at stockholder meetings is they wanted to reduce the refining footprint, which means sell something or joint venture with another company or close. And we had asked the CEO of Conoco 2 years ago at the stockholders' meeting what they had in mind for Trainer, and he said he would make more money if he sold the asset if it was running, and that's what they intended to do.
Mm.
So when the CEO tells you one thing, you know, I guess you need to look out.
Well, and I do want to get back to you, but let me give David you a chance to weigh in, and the Marcus Hook story is a little different from what we've been talking about.
Well, yeah, we were pretty shocked because we've been there for so long. And
how many years?
It's over 100 years that facility's been running, so we were shocked.
And it was closed, what, in March?
Everybody was laid off in March.
Yeah.
Yeah, we backed down prior to that, though. Got out of the feed.
And when did the news come to the folks working at the market? Same as September?
Thing. Yeah, September.
And you, would you say the three of you decided to join forces and
Oh, yeah, immediately. Immediately we all joined up because it's, you know, we're within close proximity of each other. Philly's only 10 miles up the road.
Right.
Trainers, you know, a block away, so, you know, it affects everybody in the same area. We all live in the same area,
right.
So.
And in fact, you two grew up together, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got in trouble together.
A couple times.
Once a while.
In fact, I'd say to our listeners that when their pictures were in the paper, they were not in handcuffs.
Yeah, exactly. First time for everything.
But and Dennis, I'm curious from your perspective, and Jim was talking about going down to Congress to make the pitch. What was the response, and what was the pitch?
Well, Jim and Dave, as Jim said, Jim and Dave and the International Union of the legislative group of the USW and the corporate campaign people had already started putting, you know, preliminary and objectives together. We simply joined in because that was what we had to do. It gave us a voice. You know, we're organized labor. All three locals got together, made trips together to D.C. and then Harrisburg. But you know, the process had started, so there were lots of discussions, weekly discussions. You know, the fact that we were organized and we had the ability to sit down with each other and, you know, plot some courses and then target, you know, who we needed to in the Northeast. You know, from the Senate and the House, mm-hmm. You know, it's important. You know, if we weren't organized, we wouldn't have been able to do that. If we didn't have, if we didn't belong to the steelworkers or any other union, we would not have that voice down there that we had once we joined together.
Jim, going back to you, how much did you know about finance and hedge funds and, you know, the way corporate world works?
I think I'm pretty smart. Sometimes I think I'm smarter than I actually am, I guess. But... but we got educated real quick on a lot of this stuff. And one of the decisions we made early in this was, you know, we're organized labor, right? And we can be aggressive and we can go stand at podiums and have a rhetorical
You had to censor yourself there, right?
Yes,
and I appreciate that. Go ahead.
But on this, we all sort of agreed that this was serious enough that we didn't have to go out and scream and yell. That what we had to do was educate people on how serious this would be, and we literally visited every congressman and senator from the entire Northeast United States to let them know, you know, you got to talk to a congressman in Vermont on how this is going to affect your constituents when they can't get heating oil or, you know, gasoline spikes or you know, all this stuff.
Because the Sunoco refinery is the largest on the East Coast,
so,
right?
The South Philly refinery is the largest refinery on the East Coast, the oldest continuously operating refinery in the world. You know, we understood the importance. We understood the economic impact. We understood the consumer impact. And we needed to go out and in a thoughtful way and educate other people on how this was going to affect their constituents. And we did a real good job of that. And sometimes it gets, you know, Dave and Dennis and I would go to Washington for 3 days and have 20 meetings. Mm-hmm. And you're saying the same thing over and over and over, and it gets sort of repetitive. But you have to discipline yourself because it's the first time this person's hearing it, right?
Yes.
It might be the 10th time you're saying this today, but it's the first time this person in front of you is hearing it. And you have to sort of bring that passion and bring that. And we really had to – some people we had to pull into this, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, it didn't matter, Republican, Democrat, like, you know – but we were able to educate people, and we got the right people thinking the right way. You know, we did some. You know, we had a House hearing, we had a Senate hearing on plant closures. I mean, if they spent time doing that on every plant closure, that's all they would ever do, unfortunately. But you know, we did some really good work here, and at the end of the day, it paid off for two of us. And our work's not done. We still have. You know, we still have Marcus Hook to take care of.
And Dave, you represent Marcus Hook. And was it a learning experience for you to be in the rooms and negotiating people, maybe not out on the street, rallying the troops, rallying your members to try to keep a plant open?
Yeah, it was difficult at first because people just didn't believe it. Most of the people you talked to kept saying, oh, no, something will happen. You know, they'll never close that down. It's been here too long and all. when you start seeing the stuff's going down and the steam stopping and everything else, and the flares going off, and it really woke some folks up finally. But yeah, we had to knock on a lot of doors and really, even our own.
Was it hard? I mean, was it hard
absolutely.
To do that?
And people don't want to hear, you know, it's what's going on across the country, though. You know what I mean? And nobody wants to hear it, that we're losing these jobs and we're closing down.
And these are good-paying jobs.
Oh, good-paying jobs. And the communities, you know, depend on us. So.
And Dennis, for you, this I guess it's a strategy to lobby legislators, to talk to business people, to get Republicans and Democrats behind you. Was that something new for you, Dennis?
Well, it's always new because you're looking at new faces. But this plant was shut down in '96 when BP sold it to Tosco, and we had to do some of the similar things back there because Tosco would not, you know, didn't announce whether they were going to run the plant or not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we sort of understood, but you know, the three of us and a whole lot of other labor leaders, you know, we've been watching plant closures and seen a lot of. You know, people out in the street raising a little bit of heck about, you know, losing jobs. And whether you know how to do it right or wrong, you just need to do it. You need to be out in the street. You need to be knocking on the neighbors' doors. And the neighbors were great in these little towns. And, you know, some of the things just because we have a voice at the table and we've been through some labor issues before, I think we sort of understand some of the things that need to be done.
Because if these plants had closed, it's not just that many people would have lost their jobs, but there's this trickle effect. So you've got all the companies that depend on workers going to work, buying coffee, getting lunch. Dennis, was there analysis of the kind of ripple effect if these refineries had been closed?
Well, yes, there was. And in fact, our corporate campaign people and our three locals, we immediately called for an economic impact. Our union did a preliminary impact, and it showed quite clearly that, you know, for every one job, there were 10 peripheral jobs that you would lose. Apparently, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry also did a report, and their report showed the numbers to be quite higher than ours.
That's right.
That report wasn't released, I don't believe, but it was completed in January. Somehow the news media got it, and, you know, it showed an even more devastating effect on the area and the community and the state, because we're talking about three refineries, two in Delaware County and Philadelphia, like Dave said, we're 12 miles apart. You know, the revenue and the taxes and the money generated from these places is astronomical, and... you know, it seemed to take a long time for the state and the governor, you know, to say something and, you know, publicly say something.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation, talking with three presidents of local unions, union steelworker unions, Dennis Stefano, David Miller, and Jim Savage. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
Announcing the 2012 WHYY Connections Festival, September 6th through 9th. 4 days of free arts and culture events, including an outdoor concert featuring Yola Tango, Frank Turner, Maps and Atlases, and more, Saturday, September 8th. And on September 9th, performances by Fred Parris and the Five Satins, Charlie Gracie, and more at the Philadelphia Doo-Wop Festival. More artists and events to come. Visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
Filmmaker Rodrigo Cortez's newest project follows two investigators as they try to debunk theories about paranormal activities. And get ready, the director says he has some tricks to keep you guessing.
Magic and filmmaking, in a way, are exactly the same things.
We talk about the film Red Lights, starring Sigourney Weaver and Robert De Niro, next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We're talking about three local refineries here in the Philadelphia area, talking with three presidents of three unions, Jim Savage, president of USW, United Steelworkers Union 10-1, representing workers at the Sunoco Oil Refinery in South Philadelphia, soon to be called the Philadelphia Energy Solutions. David Miller is president of USW Local 10901. He was employed at the Marcus Hook Refinery for 25 years, laid off earlier this year. Also with us and joining us by telephone is Dennis Stefano, joining us from the Union Hall, and he's the president of USW Local 10234 in Trainer, and this is the former ConocoPhillips Refinery, and it was bought by Delta Airlines and to be run by a subsidiary, Monroe Energy. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jim, I know that Bob Brady also played, there were a lot of people played a lot of important roles to get some of these settlements, but he seems to always be in the thick of negotiations, especially when it comes to unions.
He work a man's hero. And our guardian angel. At the end of the day, you know, I was talking to you during the break. You know, yeah. He called me up one day and he says, "Jimmy, I'm in a room with these really smart people, and I don't know what they're talking about, but I'm going to sit by the door and keep them in the room, keep talking." You know, it was just and he kept us informed, and he didn't. They're politicians, right?
Sure.
You know, but he didn't run to the microphone. He didn't run and have a press conference every time he did something. He worked tirelessly on this, and. You know, his chief of staff, Stanley White, who was amazing through this, called me up after the deal was done and thanked me for allowing him to be a part. And I was like, "Are you crazy? Like, we owe you the thanks." And he said, "No, you don't understand. This is the most important thing I've ever done in my government career. This was real world. This was real lives." It was really moving to get that call and how hard they worked for us. It was just we owe.
You're sitting next to your lifelong friend, David, and you know, it's a different story for people at the Marcus Hook Refinery. Do you feel some degree of survivor's guilt?
You do. And in we never went into this looking for two out of three.
Right.
We never went into this. You know, there was this group effort, but we all had our individual issues, right? And nobody gave us a chance. Every expert, every analyst said this was a 0 for 3. And the more news you got, the worse it got. And we just refused to listen to that, just kept working on it. And at the end of the day, we got 2 out of 3. We still need to find some use for that property at Marcus Hook.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sunoco's just not going to sell it as a refinery. I think we all understand that now, but there's an industrial site there where we should have good-paying jobs. And Dennis and I, between our two agreements, I already have about 50 former Marcus Hook employees hired at Philadelphia. And as part of the agreement with Philadelphia Energy Solutions, any hiring done during the next 3 years, they will hire former Marcus Hook employees. And that was important to us.
Was that part of the negotiations?
Yes. And that was really important to us to get that in there. And Dennis, I can't speak for Dennis, but I think they're hiring right now some former Marcus Hook employees. So we need to get everybody back to work. We're not done.
David, you want to weigh in on that? And I mean, it's tough to be laid off, obviously, and when a whole, a whole group are laid off together and a refinery shut down, it's got to be close to traumatic.
Oh, it's huge. Most of the guys that you're working with, you've started with. I mean, they hire in big waves, or they used to. They would hire, a lot of guys that, when they knew that people were retiring. They would bring 20 or 30 people in at a time. So you're with these guys more than you're home. And, like Jimmy and Dennis, they really went above and beyond by putting these things in their contract to help us out. So.
And you have had worked at this refinery for, what, 25
years? 25 years, yeah.
Is that pretty typical? I mean, people, this is a lifelong job.
I think there was like 80%, 80 or 90% of us were probably 20-plus year men down there, so men and women. But.
And some are getting hired by?
Yeah, thankfully, Monroe's picking up some folks and Philadelphia, I think the number's 54, actually, so far.
So far.
It's great. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Dennis, you want to weigh in on that?
Jim and Dave hit the nail on the head. We you know, are targeting, you know, the Hook people. They're experienced, knowledgeable, good workforce, and we need a few more people here. So Monroe and my local, you know, are in agreement that, you know, it's a thing to do.
I'm curious, Dennis, with the negotiations that you did your union people have to give up something in order to help save this refinery?
If you talk about concessions, that really wasn't what it was about. Because, frankly, when Conoco made the announcement to shut down, we point-blank asked them, would wages and benefits have an effect on your decision to operate or close the refinery? And they said, absolutely not. It has nothing to do with wages and benefits. But Monroe is not Conoco. You know, it's a smaller startup outfit, and they're putting their company together. And, yeah, there were some concessions, a few here and there, but it wasn't what it was about. Monroe was about hiring a skilled, knowledgeable workforce and getting things together. And, you know, the wages and benefits in the oil industry are pretty standard across the country, but that wasn't their main concern.
How about for you, Jim, and your union?
We're really happy with the contract we have with Philadelphia Energy Solutions, and we've had some difficult years labor relations-wise with Sunoco. And
any contentious, combative?
To say the least.
Okay, you're looking at me like, with great intensity when you said that. Go ahead.
And we appreciated the fact that the new CEO of Philadelphia Energy Solutions, his name's Phil Rinaldi, and I went out to Pittsburgh and met with him face-to-face for 2 days to begin negotiations. And they were in a situation where they didn't necessarily have to treat us with dignity and respect. They could have walked in and said, here's what we need. Go have your people vote on it. Let us know how it goes. And we'd have come back, and our people would have voted yes, right, because it's better to have a job.
Sure.
But these were real negotiations. They treated us decently. They listened to our arguments, you know, our justifications for why, you know, we wanted certain things. We didn't really give any concessions economically. The things that they wanted, they didn't do anything because they could, right? They explained, they made their business case for each piece of you know, everything that they needed. And we gave them some flexibility in some areas.
In terms of hiring?
Selecting and deselecting for one of the higher-paying jobs in there and things like that. But at the end of the day, even if we didn't agree, like they made their case and they explained why, and they really treated us. We're really hopeful about moving forward, working with Philadelphia Energy Solutions and creating a positive environment in there. We're really looking forward to it.
It sounds like you're describing a new chapter, new chapter of relations.
It's a whole different book.
How about for you, Dennis?
Marty, I would agree wholeheartedly with Jimmy. Just change the name to Monroe.
Oh, just change. Okay,
yep.
go from Sunoco and
yeah, it went smoothly, easily. They listened. They were concerned. What are the problems? Just as Jim explained with Energy Solutions, it is exactly what happened with us. It was very pleasant. One of the best negotiations I've ever had since 1981.
Does this tell us something about union company relations? And I'll get you in on this, David. But I'm curious, Dennis. I mean, are we in a new environment, or is this an anomaly of some sort?
It's a little bit of both. It's, you know, Monroe wants to run the refinery. It's that simple. They have to run this place. You know, they've got a goal to help Delta Airlines, but they also are going to make product that the consumers are going to use. But you know, when you waste your time with grievances and disputes and stupid things, we're very willing to sit down and let's iron this out before we even write a grievance. Let's just sit and talk about it. They're willing to do it. We're willing to do it. And that's how discussion started April 3rd when we first met with them.
How about for you, David?
Well, it's obvious that we fight for people's rights and everything, right? But it didn't have to be a war. It didn't have to be the way it was.
You think there could have been some kind of resolution?
I believe there could have been. I mean, if they would have been up front from the beginning, I think we could have went in a different direction. But it's just the way it went, and when we dealt with it the way we had to, you know. We learned on the fly pretty quick on what we needed to get done. And like Jimmy was saying earlier, and Dennis, you know, when you step your toes in something, you're not too sure about it. We just dove in and got to the root of the problems and tried to weed through them as best we could, yeah. You know. And there was a lot of help. There was a lot of people involved in this. From all three locals, all our GNN committees and e-board guys and then our members in general, you know, once they figured out this was all for real, you know, people started showing up and coming out and finding what they could do. And we had rallies, we had, you know, we went down to Washington several times. Me, Jimmy, and Dennis, yeah, Harrisburg. Me, Jimmy, and Dennis were living out of suitcases down in D.C. for, you know, months, so...
That's David Miller. He's president of USW Local 10901. Also with us, Jim Savage, president of USW Local 10.1. And on the telephone, Dennis Stefano, president of USW Local 10234. Each of them are president of local unions here. We're talking about, I guess, two out of three refineries that got saved in the last couple of months and what it took to save not just the refineries, but these well-paying jobs. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Lisa from Media to join us on Radio Times. And Lisa, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for having this show.
Sure.
In particular, Marty, and say two things. One is that I have a lifelong friend who worked at one of the refineries. He's in his late 50s now, and with the idea of being out of work, as everybody knows, it was a really scary thing, especially at that age.
Sure.
So this was a triumph and helped me as a friend. So I had no direct impacted directly by this, and yet indirectly, the psychology of what happened here really helped me. So the fact that my friend still has a job and won't be, you know, unemployed and homeless is really important. So the advocacy here, not just because of the fact that these are union people, but the fact that people spoke up and fought for what they needed in the Philadelphia area, Philadelphia region. And the second piece has to do with the actual union piece, and I just know from things I heard that there were a lot of things that people weren't being told, and as you know, your speakers already talked about. And I just want to tell listeners who don't think that this discussion matters to them that whether you're in this industry or in another industry, you know, unions are going to be the thing that helps those who don't have a voice. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Lisa, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. David, can I give you a chance to respond? And she's talking about a friend who was worried about losing their job and how difficult that was.
She hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's so many people that were, you know, in that age group and that she speaks of. There were so many of us that affected exactly like she was talking about. And it does. It trickles down through your children, your grandkids. Everybody's worried, and you don't realize how many families depend on families, right? You're a group. So when one part of that gets yanked out from underneath you, you know, it affects everybody.
Sure.
And it's the same thing with the communities. I mean, these people that have garages and just anything and everything from restaurants to, any kind of stores down there, thrift stores and all, these folks depend on us coming in and out of these towns. That's their money coming in and out.
Did you or have others considered moving? There are other energy parts of the country.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that a lot of them went down towards Texas and North Dakota, and Louisiana, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's
they had to uproot. Yeah, most of them left their families behind, which is the sad part. The fathers are flying back and forth and trying to spend time. But when you got mortgages and kids in school and you know, God forbid you got problems with one of your children or something, you know, you just have to do it.
Dennis, actually, I was talking with David and Jim before the show began about good-paying union jobs, and certainly in the past that has helped to create a strong middle class. Is that under threat, do you think?
Absolutely. There's no question about it with trade agreements and offshoring and, you know, you don't find a better workforce than people in the United States. And we're losing various industries, you know, because of corporate greed, because of making a profit. Nothing wrong with making a profit, but,
right.
You know, at one time there were over 350 refineries operating in the United States prior to 1980. Today there's 115.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could just look at whole industries and see the same thing.
Jim, you're an operator, and I'm wondering the kind of skills that you have to work in a refinery. What does an operator do?
You make adjustments to the unit, make sure that the product you're making is on spec. Some days are real good, some days they can't pay you enough to be there.
Right.
The issue is it's a real high-paying job, and what we tried to explain to a lot of people was it's not exactly a transferable skill. You know how to operate your unit, right? Right. But that's what you know, and that's what you do, and they're good at it. We have a world-class workforce in all three of these refineries, working in a dangerous environment. Your head has to be in the game every day. It was distressing that. It's not like, if you're a welder, you're a welder, right? For operators, it was really a unique situation. So.
And how about, David, you've worked in maintenance.
I started out in operations and transferred into maintenance. But what Jimmy was talking about is it takes you years to learn these units and really be comfortable on them. And it isn't a skill that can go just anywhere. And the guys that are getting jobs, it's other refineries.
Right.
And the refinery people that are seeing this, that's why they're hiring these guys. They see that it's a skill that they can't just train somebody to do overnight. So.
And how did you learn it? On the job?
Yeah, on the job. I mean, there was an apprenticeship type of deal when I first got hired, and you spent years learning your units.
Mm. How about for you, Dennis?
Yeah, it's OJT. It's putting your hands on the wrenches and, running lathes and, getting in and getting dirty.
Yep.
And exactly. And is it hot and dirty?
Oh, yeah.
To say the least.
To say how hot and dirty are we talking about, Dennis?
Well, you're talking about high pressures and high temperatures in these process units. 200, 300, 400, 500 degrees internal temperatures of some units, or you're talking 700 degrees. So that radiates out. Summertime, it's pretty warm out there.
Are we talking over 100 inside?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're not inside. If you're an operator's outside on the unit, mechanics are outside working on equipment. At times, we come in and take a break, and, you try to cool off and drink water. But we're exposed to the elements.
Yeah, it's hot and dirty, too.
We all sit on the rivers, It's cold on the rivers, and, So you deal with that. You learn to deal with it. It's part of the job.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Dennis Stefano. He's president of USW Local 10234 in Trainer. This is the former ConocoPhillips refinery, now being run by Monroe Energy, a subsidiary of Delta Airlines, a deal worked out earlier this year. Also with us is Jim Savage, and he's president of USW Local 101, representing workers at the Sunoco Oil Refinery in South Philadelphia, and that refinery was saved through a deal between Sunoco and the Carlyle Group. David Miller, president of USW Local 10901, was employed at the Marcus Hook Refinery. He and others have been laid off. Some have been hired at some of these other refineries, and we're talking about what all this means. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Man presents the Philadelphia Orchestra Pico Pops at Man with the music of John Williams, an 80th birthday celebration, Friday, July 20th, featuring the music of Jaws, E.T., Harry Potter, Star Wars, and more. On Saturday, July 21st, it's Symphonic Spectacular, dazzling visuals and fireworks, big screen imagery and fireworks accompany classical favorites. Tickets are available at mancenter.org or 215-893-1999. The Man supports WHYY.
This land is your land.
This Saturday marks the centennial of Woody Guthrie's birth. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about his life and music with Jeff Place, who co-produced a new Guthrie box set and co-wrote the companion book, and Ed Cray, who wrote a biography of Guthrie called Ramblin' Man that's published in a new edition. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Texas is in a battle with the Justice Department over its new voter ID laws. Where do other state laws stand? Also, Penn State releases what's expected to be a blockbuster report on what Penn State officials knew and when they knew it. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Jim Savage, David Miller, and Dennis Stefano. I should make just one slight correction. David Miller was the president of 901 until just last Friday. The new president of that union is a guy named Rob DiIorio.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Just wanted to make that correction. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Jim, let me put something to you. What's also interesting, and I said at this at the top of the show, is that this was an agreement, and you had Republicans and Democrats on the same side of this issue. Was that a surprise to you, or as you were negotiating with everybody, did that matter whether it was an R or a D?
I think that when you look at what's going on in this country right now, right, and you look at the, quite frankly, toxic political environment, and what we did here is we took a very conservative governor and his administration, a center-left president and his administration.
And that would be the Obama administration?
Correct.
Yes.
One of the most liberal men in Congress in Bob Brady. An ineffective and quite frankly, paralyzed city administration. Labor, business, and private equity. And everybody got in a room, and instead of talking about who created this problem, what and whose fault it was, figured out a way to resolve it. And I think that maybe some people ought to take a look at what happened here and start fixing some problems in this country.
Use this as a model going forward.
It could be. I'm not hopeful that they will.
Right. Is that a knowing laugh from you, Dennis?
Sure is.
So you think this was sort of an outlier? Time will tell, I guess.
I agree wholeheartedly with what Jimmy just laid out there.
Well, let me just follow up on something you said, Jim, about city administration. You didn't see them as competent?
In general?
Well, on this issue?
No, on this issue, all of those entities rolled their sleeves up and fixed the problem. Yep. In general?
That's something else. Okay, I hear you. Let me get, looks like Irene from Spring City to join us. Irene, excuse me, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Is that a better reception?
Yes, it is. Much better. Go ahead, Irene.
Okay, well, I just wanted to share that my dad started working at the tank farm in Aston in Delaware County when he was 17 years old. He used to cut the grass there, and he moved up through the ranks. He was a shop steward for quite a while, and then he became a manager. And when he retired, he worked there for 40 years. He was managing the Marcus Hook refinery. He was in charge of 75% of that refinery, and he knew every inch of it. He knew it like the back of his hand. He knew where oil was going to go when it had to be stored, where there were caves and tanks. And so I grew up hearing about the industry that, you know, at the dinner table. And there were times when there were strikes that my dad had to live at the refinery. He stayed there for weeks at a time and absolutely hated that. He
not
did
sure.
not like that one bit. So, but he raised five kids and made a very good living. It was a cycle breaker for him. It was a time when you could come from, he came from an orphanage, and you worked hard and did what you were supposed to do. You could make a good living, and he did.
Well, Irene, I appreciate the call. I'm going to let you get to your dog, but let me give David Miller a chance to respond to that. I mean, this is a story that we've certainly heard before, but it's still very moving.
Over and over and over. Yeah, people. The Pugh family hired a lot of guys that came home out of the service also. If you were in the service and you grew up in Delaware County and you got out, at that time you could go down the river and get jobs just about in any place down there, General Chemical, BP, Westinghouse, and all. And all these places have closed up. Sunoco was like the last standing company that hired people like that. And, you know, for like myself, you know, you're high school educated and you're raising a family and doing well. We're not breaking any records or getting rich, but we're living comfortable. We're doing real well. Our kids are doing good in schools, and like she said, you're breaking cycles. You're getting out of that, you know. the lower income families, and it's
moving on,
yeah,
moving up the ladder.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, with every generation, you hope your kids do a little better than you.
Dennis, you want to add to that at all?
It's the same story here when it was Sinclair Refining. No, I can't add. Dave said it marvelously.
Oh, fair enough. And do you all come from union families? I mean,
yes.
Yes, that's you, David. You as well, Jim?
Yep.
And you, Dennis?
No. I am now, and my family's union, and my right. daughters are very pro-labor, but no, I had a lot of Republicans in my house.
Must make for an interesting Thanksgiving dinner.
It was difficult at times.
I've been at those meals as well. I think all families, hopefully, in a good way, are a nice mix of people. Let me get David from Port Richmond to join us on Radio Times. And David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I just returned to Philadelphia, having been living in California for the last 4 years, and it's refreshing to hear this type of consensus and cooperation, although with a lot of hard work, that has retained these important jobs and this important impact economically on our region. And my thought is that, you know, this really needs to be elevated and held up as a potential blueprint, that when you have your government, you have management, and you have your workers, take a look at the big picture. This is an economic impact of the region. These are the people who are, because of these solid jobs, the banks are going to give them car loans, mortgages. It's what makes a community stable. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that there'd be other parts of this country that would take a look at this as an example of cooperation for the benefit of all.
Well, David, I appreciate the call, and I think our guests do as well. Let me start with you, Jim. Your thoughts?
I agree. It was, you know, we don't have to fight. We can, right? And when we have to, we will. But I think that we showed here that, you know, we tried. This was a very easy conversation to have about the impact on the community, because it was a valid point.
It was real.
And you know, everything that we said, when we said, you know, about what's going to happen with the availability of heat and oil and gasoline shortages, and then the Energy Information Administration put out a report that confirmed everything we said. In fact, we were being conservative. And as Dennis said earlier, we were talking about the economic impact, and we were using a 7-to-1 or 10-to-1 job factor. The state did a study. It was 18-to-1, right? And they buried it. Right, the press finally got a hold of it like 2 months later, but you know that everything we said, we were conservative and thoughtful in our discussions. But at the end of the day, like I said, everybody came together here, rolled up their sleeves, and I think we did some pretty amazing things. Yeah. And we'll gladly take our piece of it, but there was a lot of people that had to come together and make that happen.
David, thanks for the call to Radio Times. To you, Dennis, would this have worked without the tax subsidies that came from Harrisburg?
I personally believe yes. There's a lot to the discussion between Delta Monroe and the governor that I surely am not aware of, but you know, I guess it helped.
It's kind of sweetened the pot a little bit.
I suspect it did.
But you're not privy to that?
I am. No, I was not involved in those. There were private discussions, and I have no clue.
Jim, do you? I mean, you know, these deals did come with subsidies from the state.
Everybody had a piece of it.
Right.
You know, we're thankful that everybody was willing to do whatever it was they did to make it happen.
And I'm curious about your relationship or your negotiations with the Carlyle Group. This is an equity, you know, an equity fund, and I think when people hear about Bain Capital, you know, they think one thing, perhaps. But I'm interested in your impression of Carlyle.
I thought it was amazing. It was my first exposure to private equity up close like that. But Carlyle is sort of a different animal. They have historically a very good relationship with the steelworkers, because they do come in and they invest in unsexy businesses, mm-hmm. and what they do is they come in and invest and grow businesses. Right? There are private equity folks out there that come in and they'll load you up with debt, and they walk away with buckets full of cash while they leave communities devastated behind them. Right? And had Carlyle come to us with and wanted to have that discussion, this would have been a completely different past right. couple of weeks, right? Because then we would have been fighting. You know, but they came to us and they told us the vision for this refinery and the money they're going to invest in it. We believe in it, and we can't wait to get started.
Do you want to add to that, Dennis, at all?
Well, yeah, I would just like to add that you're talking about Carlyle and Monroe Energy or Delta Airlines, who historically these companies aren't running oil refineries.
Right.
When our refineries, and we all kind of figured out we're going to get shut down, Sunoil and Conoco were complaining about the price of crude oil. They weren't complaining about OPEC. They weren't complaining about wages and benefits. It was the price of crude. We can't run these refineries economically. And here you've got two brand-new companies that do not run refineries, and they figure out a way. We think we can run them.
Interesting. Let me get Carol from Narberth to join our conversation. Carol, go ahead. Your radio time.
I have a question for the man from Marcus Hook Company.
Indeed. Sure.
I was wondering if they were entitled to pensions both from the union and the company, and if the company was still able to offer them their pensions when they retire.
Carol, I appreciate the call. David, go ahead.
The pensions are funded by the company. It wasn't a union pension. It was a company pension, and you had to meet a criteria to get your retirement. Your age and your years of service had a lot to do with it. Myself, with 25 years, I don't have the age, so the pension.
What age did you need?
You had to be over 55 years old by last July, I believe it was. Don't quote me on the times because I got so many numbers running through my head.
Okay.
But yeah, the pensions, it's very, very hard pill to swallow there because we didn't get our, you know, what I had accrued in there and what I walked away with is a huge difference.
And what are you living on?
Right now we're collecting a severance. If you had, you get 2 weeks for every year of service, so that's good, and the insurance is being paid right now till people can land on their feet. And so far, you know, it's working out for quite a few folks. But no, the pensions we didn't get unless you were already of age to retire, and what you got was a very slim portion of that, if you got anything at all.
Jim, you got it's a 3-year contract, and it was what, overwhelmingly supported by the union?
98%.
And does that include some raises? What does that include?
Oh yeah, we'll get a raise the day that Philadelphia Energy Solutions takes over. They're bringing a little gift for us, you know.
The gift of the
former raise, right?
You know, and when does that happen? When do they officially take over?
I think they're trying to close by Labor Day. You know, those are the rooms I'm not allowed in, and quite frankly, probably don't want to be in. Mm-hmm. But you know, we hope that they expedite it. We're really excited about working with them. So, you know, we're hoping by Labor Day, right. And then the contract will begin that day. So we'll have 3 years from that day.
And Dennis, for your crew, what's in the contract?
Our contract is similar to Jim's. It's a 3-year contract. They expire generally around the same time, and we're all part of the National Oil Bargaining Program, where we pattern bargain across the country and. We have raises included, and you know, it's comparable. It's a good contract. Happy with it, and it was passed overwhelmingly, about the same numbers, 97-98%. Marty, if I could add one other thing,
please do. We're
talking about, and as Jim laid out, Dave laid out, we're talking about Harrisburg and Washington and all the people that worked and put this all together. There's a lot of our union members, our executive boards, and both Dave and Jim have an excellent group of elected officials in our locals. So do I. There were a lot of people out in the street that were knocking on doors, signing letters, you know, carrying petitions. So the three of us had a lot of help with some
Absolutely.
Really good people.
Yep.
So
yep.
We'd be remiss if we didn't, you know, say, hey, thanks to all of those other people that, you know, the list would be so long, we'd be here for an hour.
I hear you.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
hear you. And
There's no way that the three of us could have done this.
No.
It was just too much. It was overwhelming. Sometimes, I mean, there was just, and so many people grabbed an oar, you know, and yep. it was amazing to be a part of. It changed my life.
Yeah,
there was
ahead.
A lot of folks that stepped up that you don't normally see around or, you know, that don't come to meetings or whatever. But like I said, it was so real and so quick that... Yeah. You know, when you're a drowning man, you're grabbing an oar, like Jimmy said. So,
The other thing that goes along with that is all the other labor organizations that stepped out and helped us out and also carried the message to Harrisburg. So there's a lot of people to thank.
And do the three of you, do you see your children working in a refinery? Is that, can you think that? You're shaking your head now, David.
No way. I don't. I would
do
take
you want
them
to? Or
no.
No.
I would take them down there to show them what not to do for a living at this
really?
Point.
Because of what happened at Marcus Hook?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, all kidding aside, like I said, you know, 25 years down there, and I thought I had a job for life. And normally that's the way it went down. If you got hired in there and you put in a day's work, you were there for life. And then you could get your sons in there, your daughters in there, and it was a good paying job. With how they ripped the rug out from underneath of us, I wouldn't put anybody through that. This has been a horrible year. So
I hear you. And what about for you, Tim?
My son's 22, and I'm hopeful he'll find his place in this world. And I hope it's not in a refinery.
Oh, is that right? Wow. And Dennis, we're almost out of time.
Yeah, my youngest daughter is a school teacher at Ridley High, and my older daughter is a homemaker with a couple of kids, and I got a couple of grandkids, so they're doing okay. But you know what? If I had some sons or daughters and they wanted to look and work in a refinery, I'd be happy with it. There are, you know, really good people, men and women, working in these places, but, you know, it's their choice, obviously.
Well, Dennis Stefano, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And David Miller, thank you very much. Good luck to you as well.
Thank you.
And also, Jim Savage, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.